Hey guys, Ben here, about to play the podcast for you today. I'm pretty sure I've been saying if there's a game seven, it'll be on Sunday. I mean Monday, but I keep thinking about the every other day situation, which is what's happening now with game five and six, but there is an extra day. So anyway, if I say Sunday, I mean Monday. Just understand that. You guys already knew that, and you're probably thinking, what's he doing? Just chalk it up to lack of sleep. All right, anyway, just wanted to make that correction. Let you guys know, and let's get into the podcast.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing here. If by chance it sounds a little bit different, it's because I'm coming to you guys from a little different place at this moment. I'm over at Nats Park in the press box. I came here to do some work here, but I was earlier today over at the Verizon Center where Scott Brooks had his availability. I will play a little bit of that for you here in just a moment. And also, I recorded an interview with our pal Jay King from MassLive.com. He's the Celtics insider there, as well as one of the co-hosts on the Locked On Celtics podcast. And we just had a good conversation, you know, going over everything from game five. He gave us the Celtics perspective on how they got off to such a great start, why Avery Bradley was such a force in this game. Also, his thoughts, but we both talked about the crowd reaction to Kelly Oubre, as well as who we think are the key players for game six Friday night with, at 8 o'clock at Verizon Center. So good conversation there, and I'll get all that for you guys in just a second. Appreciate you guys as always with your feedback, with listening. I know last night's game was a tough one for sure. I don't even know if Frank Hanrahan and I, who helped me do the recap podcast, really had a ton of insight to offer. The Wizards were just didn't have much energy from the start, never really caught up. And, you know, it's one of those games where if it happens in the middle of June on a back-to-back, on the deep into a road trip, you can sort of chalk it up to, well, you're bound to have a letdown kind of game. To see it happen in game five of the playoffs, definitely definitely a tough look there. So anyway, more podcasts to come. I just noticed that tomorrow's podcast, or the one after this, presumably will be what the recap I do with Todd Dybas after game six, will be the 200th podcast of the Locked On Wizards since I started, which I basically started opening day of the season. So crazy that we've gotten up to 200 and did not even know if it would last past a couple weeks when they started 2-8. But here we are, and it's been a lot of fun, to say the least. And we'll see if the Wizards can give us some more fun with some more basketball beyond Friday. So anyway, let's get into this. I'll go first here. I'll play the interview with Jay King from MassLive.com. You can follow him on Twitter at @byjking. Good conversation from his take on game five, as well as we both share some thoughts on what we think is key coming up.
All right, we are here with Ben Standing, that's me, and then we got Jay King with MassLive.com. He's the Locked On Celtics part of this. We're going to do the crossover podcast once again. Jay's had to do the heavy lifting here as far as the travel end of it. I'm sure he is wiped out. I'm not exactly running on full energy right now, so we won't do too much chit-chat here up top. Let's just get right into this, Jay, and try to figure out what happened in Game 5 and where we're going in Game 6. We'd like to do a little who, what, where, when, why here on the Locked On Wizards. So let's just get into it with this on the why. I've got two questions on the why. Why did Avery Bradley do the Wizards like that? And maybe more seriously, why was Boston so successful on those fast breaks early on in the game? You had a front row seat for all of it. And you know the Celtics as well as anybody. What was your sense? Why did Bradley look like he looked like an all-star after being a no-show the last two games? And how come Boston was able to turn the tables on the Wizards with that fast break?
Well, I think Avery Bradley, part of his big game was the fact that the Wizards couldn't stop the Celtics in the fast break. And it wasn't like the Wizards were turning the ball over all the time. It was a lot of it was just missed layups, and then the Celtics grabbed the rebound, went the other way, and there was no floor balance for Washington. And that really got the Celtics running right away. Bradley got a few dunks early, and once guys like that, once talents like that see the ball go in the hoop as often as he did, it starts to open up a little bit. He started feeling himself. He hit that, like, Avery Bradley does not do crossovers, and certainly not like a series of crossovers. So when he kind of isolated on Marcin Gortat and then hit that jumper from the left corner, it was like, all right, Avery Bradley is really, really feeling himself right now. The Wizards' lack of success in transition, they were brutal, brutal, brutal getting back on defense. And John Wall forced some shots, I thought, at the rim. And the Celtics did a great job of protecting the rim. And then one pass outlet, and boom, they were gone. It was far too easy. Washington needs to do a much better job of that in Game 6.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird because I think Boston had 15 fast break points in the first quarter. They only finished with 19. So they closed it off to some degree. But, you know, we're all human beings, obviously. And so I know that there are some days where I, quote unquote, go to work and I'm not fully engaged by any stretch of the imagination. I'm looking at the internet too much, playing on Twitter, screwing around, whatever it may be. But I don't know. Somehow you think when it's a physical endeavor, you think it would be different on some level, I guess, because that's, you know, what they're doing. And yet you could tell the Wizards just had no juice in that quarter. There was a play, I don't know if you noticed it while you were there, but I saw it on TV and then saw the replays later. It wasn't in a fast break situation, but there was a half court opportunity where Avery Bradley's out on the left wing, out by the 3-point line, and John Wall's guarding him. And by body language, Wall looked completely disengaged. He got sort of almost had like his hands in his pocket kind of look, slumped over, and he was looking at the top of the key where the ball was. Bradley just goes immediately back door, took Wall a good couple seconds to realize what happened, and Bradley scored. And, you know, for the Wizards, I just always think from an engagement standpoint, if John Wall is not going at it on both ends, they collectively aren't. And I think that play seemed like an example there. And I'm not saying it was all on him by any stretch. I'm just saying that was just one example. They would just look so lax for what, you know, seemingly should have been. You have to know that Boston's going to go for the haymaker in the first quarter at home, and yet the Wizards seem totally unprepared for it.
Yeah, it was like the bizarro start. You know, every start this series has just been Washington getting out in transition, Washington really dominating the Celtics in every way, and the Celtics finally flipped it on them. You know, it took five games for them to get a good start, but when they did, it was mighty. And then the bench came in, and the Celtics bench is just so much more athletic than the Wizards bench that when they get stops with that group, they can really get out in transition with Rozier, Smart, Jaylen Brown. So the bench has been a problem for Washington, but when the starts are also a problem, they've got real problems, because that starting lineup for them has to be a real force.
And that's what was so interesting about Game 4. Boston does take the lead at the end of the first quarter, then push it up to 10 to start the second, and you start to feel like, oh boy, the Wizards are going to be in trouble, except that John Wall, you know, went nuts in the second quarter, basically brought the Wizards back himself, and then obviously the third quarter is when they went on that 26-0 run. This isn't exactly the same thing, but sort of tying it into what something that was different with the Wizards, John Wall all year, he can get to the basket whenever he wants to. He blows by opponents, big, small, whatever it is. He gets into the lane. You know, he'll typically make some sort of play, get the ball up on the rim, kick it out. It seemed like the Celtics had, like, you know, everybody was like Dikembe Mutombo last night. I don't know if John Wall didn't have it in full gear or not, or the Celtics were just so amped up that they knew what was coming. But every time he got around the rim, it just seemed like they had an answer for him. And my guy Todd Dybus and I were chatting this morning on the text, and he was thinking that because the Celtics may be recognizing that when Wall goes so hard at the basket, he often ends up on the ground and it doesn't always get back immediately, that the Celtics, that would give them an opportunity, and it seemed like maybe all of that somehow also combined to Boston getting those fast break chances.
Yeah, and nobody got back. Like, Beal was just hanging out in the corner. There was just no floor balance. There was none of that. And, like, Wall really struggled with finishing, especially early. And like you said, like, Al Horford was great at the rim. Amir Johnson was great at the rim. Brad Stevens took some heat from Celtics fans for sticking with Amir Johnson in the starting lineup. But I thought that decision obviously went really well. And the Wizards they kind of just never put it together. It was a very different feel from the first, even the first two games in Boston when Boston won. There were parts of that game, those games where the Wizards really dominated, and game five, for the first time, Boston really controlled it the whole way. And even the Wizards, I thought, especially at the start of the third quarter, I thought they really started to pick up their juice. Like they brought the energy then, but the Celtics kind of answered every threat and held them off. And to your point, I'm looking at the shot chart right now. Wall was just 3 of 9 inside the restricted area. So really tough finishing for him. And the Celtics capitalized every time he missed too. It was like, boom, boom, they're gone.
Yeah, it was definitely an odd look. And it was the first, I mean, even though it was a bad spot, you can't, bad time to have a really bad game. Now you're down 3-2. It was essentially the first really bad game for the Wizards in this series. So it's sort of like, all right, you're going to have one stinker, I guess. Ideally, no, but realistically you will. Just a bad time, obviously, to have that. Let's get to the where of it all, as in, where do the role players, when they go on the road, where do they store their confidence and talent? Because clearly it doesn't seem like the role players for either side can figure out how to do that much on the road. I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to Avery Bradley and say he's a role player, but realistically, I view a role player as somebody who's not an all-star slash a guy who's really going to take over a game. And that's typically not what he's going to do. Same with Otto Porter and Marcin Gortat and so on. And yet Avery Bradley, I know he's had some big games before, but he was insane in the first in the first quarter. And then on the flip side with the Wizards, I mean, Otto Porter is about the only guy who kind of did his norm, but Markieff Morris, 9 points. The bench, other than Kelly Oubre, who I never know what to make of his performances, but Bogdanovich, Jennings, Mahimi, they went 3 for 13. Just, and yet, like I said, Boston's guys were bad in D.C. I mean, they always say role players are better at home, but to this degree, it seems crazy.
Yeah, and part of that, I think, for the Celtics was they got out in transition and they got easy, easy buckets. Like, Avery Bradley benefited from some really, really easy buckets. And then another part of that I thought was that they did a much better job of handling the way the Wizards guarded Isaiah Thomas. They used him as a screener, a decoy. Like, they figured out new ways to open up things for other guys. And then they were just cutting. Like, Brad Stevens said he put an emphasis on cutting. So many times they found Al Horford either in the post or on the perimeter, and then Jay Crowder would cut to the paint or Avery Bradley would cut to the paint. And they really got some quality looks from that. And like you said, the Wizards, they didn't seem locked in. And when a team is going to cut that sharp, you have to be locked in to cut that off, and they weren't. But it is weird, man. Like Bojan Bogdanovic, he was fantastic in game three. He can barely do anything in game five. Mahinmi had, I thought, a really good game. Was it game three or game four? The first game he played, game three. And then he kind of was a non-factor. So the Wizards, like you said, their role players didn't show up from Markieff Morris to the guys on their bench. Obviously, their bench has been a weak point most of the year, but that was tough. Were you surprised by how little a factor Morris was? And like, Al Horford really, really got the best of him.
Yeah, I was. I mean, that whole Amir Johnson, Gerald Green thing has been, big problem for Boston, and the Wizards have largely taken advantage of it. And I wrote something just the day before on Morris saying, you know, he's not just talking the talk. He's doing very good at that. But he's walking the walk based on, like, I looked this up before, I guess before yesterday, of the top five players in net rating for the playoffs within like at least 20 minutes average per game, four of the top five were on Golden State. The other person was Markieff Morris. He was ahead of Kevin Durant. I mean, he's been, you know, not saying he's the best player, but I'm saying he's been very effective and he's very aggressive. So you put all that together and you like what you're like your chances, but then, yeah, he just looked like just was not there at all. So yeah, to that degree, it's a problem. And like you said, if the Wizards starting five isn't not just staying even with Boston, but getting an edge, the Wizards are in trouble. And that was certainly the case yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, the first five games, their starting lineup was a plus 45.2 net rating, which is just like a supernova. And then in game five, they were minus 11 over 21 minutes. So just a huge difference. And part of that was just shooting. You know, if Bradley Beal doesn't go 0-for-4, then you look at things differently. If, you know, Avery Bradley doesn't go 4-for-7, Al Horford 3-for-4, like the Celtics really shot the ball well, but like Washington didn't do much to hinder their chances. And I was surprised. This is such a weird series, man. Like I want another game. Obviously game two was a classic. Game two was some of the most fun I've had watching a basketball game, just because point guards just electric, two teams really playing well. But I want more quality basketball games. It's just one blowout after the next. Give me another game where both teams are playing their best, because I think these teams are really evenly matched, but they just haven't brought it on the same days.
Well, and so that brings us to the next question, the what of it all, is in what do we make of these teams if the home team just wins every game? Because, like, the narrative coming out of D.C., and I was definitely somebody pushing it, was I think the Wizards are the better team. Now, it sounds a little bit stupid to make that claim after Boston just hammered them by, what, 22 points in a game that they won from start to finish. But at the same point, the home team has won every game so far, including the regular season. The Wizards are plus 2 in the playoff series, just total points, which is nothing. But on the season, I think they're plus 25. But, again, they haven't won in Boston. Just means they've had bigger blowouts at home. But at the same point, you know, if Boston wins the series just because they have home court advantage, essentially, okay, I guess, I don't even know how to compartmentalize it if you're a Wizards fan. I mean, it's sort of like frustrating, but on the other hand, you're like, well, I guess if we had home court, we would have won, or if this is a neutral court. So if Boston wins game six, and we'll get to that in a second, but if they win game six, then it becomes a little bit harder to say the Wizards were the better team. But if they just go home, I don't know. I sort of like shrug my shoulders. I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's why you got home court advantage.
Yeah. Another strange part of this series is like how quirky the runs have been. Like Boston hardly ever turned the ball over during the regular season. And then when Washington goes on huge runs, it's like turnover, turnover, turnover. And even like simple passes are just boom, Washington steals them going the other way. And then in game five, it wasn't that Washington was turning the ball over, but like they just weren't getting back on defense. They were giving up wide open dunks. So there hasn't been that game where we've seen like both teams in the half court, and other than game two, really. And game two, that was a classic game. It really was. It was just phenomenal to watch. Two teams really playing at a high level. But other than that, like, there have just been quirky runs where teams just kind of collapse and the other team just surges. And we haven't seen that, like, toe-to-toe go back at it since game two. So I'm hoping game six is more competitive. Maybe the Wizards just trample the Celtics, though, since they're at home. I don't know. It's just been a strange series. Like you said, it's tough to tell, like, who's a better team. I have no idea. Like you said, I thought it was Washington after game four. I thought they had outplayed the Celtics. Even in the losses, they had outplayed the Celtics for a large portion of the time. And then the wins obviously were just blowouts, but game five, the Celtics flipped the script from the start, and the Wizards, like, they shot 38.5%, gave up 52.9% shooting with 16 three-pointers. They just got decimated, and they never made a run.
Yeah, I mean, like, part of me wants to say if these teams that agree to play at Madison Square Garden for the seven game series, part of me wants to say I think the Wizards are the better team. They have more ways to score typically, and that they would win. But if you're telling me that, but by that sort of neutral court perception, if you're taking away that home court advantage from the in terms of the crowd, well, then it goes back to that whole thing about what are the role players doing? Are they stepping up? Or not. So yeah, it's confusing and sort of frustrating. Like I want the Wizards to win game six, if for no other reason it's, you know, I'm not done. I want to keep going. I wouldn't mind going to the conference finals. So I hope they can keep it going. But it would just be, I don't know, part of me kind of wants a road team to win in one game just to be like, all right, so it wasn't just home court advantage. Somebody did something. And I guess if the Wizards win this, you know, if both teams have a chance potentially here if the Wizards, win game six to win that game. But we will see. Speaking of game six, let's get to that. As in, who do we think are the key players for each team in game six? I'll just start with the Wizards and just say, you know, everything always starts with John Wall and Bradley Beal. So that's a little bit, I guess, too obvious. But, you know, we mentioned Markieff Morris. It just feels like that in the starting lineup is where they have a big advantage, if you know, at least at the start with that Amir Johnson situation. So, you know, Markieff Morris, again, he's largely been very effective. They've been much better when he's on the court. So I think they need to get him playing back at a high level like he is, like he was earlier in the series. And if that happens, you know, and Wall and Beal do their thing, I think the Wizards should be fine. So I'll go Mr. Morris. How about you? Who's the key player for Boston, you think, in game six?
I'm going to go with two, Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder. When those guys knock down shots, when those guys provide secondary scoring, like Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford are going to do their thing every night. They're going to be at least good, a lot of times great every night. And obviously the Wizards have done a lot to take Isaiah Thomas out of the game plan. They've focused a ton of energy on him and done a really good job limiting him. But that strategy isn't as effective when Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder are getting buckets. So those guys, to me, like when they start making shots, the Celtics go from a good team to a great team, or at least they can look like a great team when those guys are making shots, and then Isaiah and Horford are creating plays for everybody. So I'm going to go with those two guys. I think the bench will be what it is. Maybe it shows up on the bench. Maybe it doesn't. But if you get another really good game from Bradley, another really good game from Crowder, then I think the Celtics would be very, very pleased and very optimistic going into things if they knew those two guys were going to play well. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
From the Washington perspective, what did you think about the Oubre chance?
That's funny. I was debating whether I wanted to ask you that. You know, look, I mean, you know, we're all big boys. We're all adults. You know, we've all been, you know, whether recovery teams, we've played, you know, competitive sports on some basic level, even if it's just at your local gym, and guys get at each other and you hear people scream and yell. And but there does seem to be a line, right? I mean, it's one thing to sort of chant Oubre sucks or whatever. When you take it to the level that you can't even, you know, in theory that the TV broadcast is doing their best to drown it out, probably. It's just like, do we need to go there? So I don't care that they boot him. You know, rock on, do what you got to do. But when they went to the F you Oubre thing or whatever, you know, it's like, come on, man. What, do we have to go there? But
when it first started, I was like, whoa. Is that really what I'm hearing right now? And then it continued, and it was loud, and it was clear. But, yeah, that was definitely unexpected. That was – obviously, Oubre was going to get a lot of crap in Boston after going after Olynyk. But, yeah, that was – That was definitely unexpected. I didn't expect that much venom, man. The crowd was juiced up though. And the moment that was actually pretty funny, and there's no way Brad Stevens tried to do it, was when Oubre was at the foul line, and everyone's chanting at him, everyone's booing him, whatever. Brad subs in Kelly Olynyk. And the whole crowd, it was maybe the loudest the crowd was the entire game, was for Kelly Olynyk subbing in while Kelly Oubre was shooting a free throw. So it's bizarre that the subplots in a playoff series are just strange too. This series has had a little bit of everything, man. I'll be sad to see it go.
I did a podcast earlier in the week with Mike Wise, and I said that this is the perfect series because you got the 90s aggression. They don't like each other. They're playing hard. They're going at it. No easy basket, that kind of thing. Except for the fact that it also has the modern offense because they can't actually stop each other. If you could take the animosity combined with the offense and make this the product, boy, I think the NBA would be the most popular sport.
Just get guys yapping at each other, guys hating each other, and guys raining down threes, man. That's how it should be. I'm a big fan of. There's just a real anger there in both teams, and like you could see, even when Terry Rozier was making plays against Brandon Jennings in Game 5. He went into a huddle and he was screaming about how he was getting the best of Jennings. And these two teams, there's a lot of animosity there, and a lot of really actually tough guys. Like these teams are legitimately tough with legitimate tough guys who aren't just like talking and talking crap. These are legitimate, like hardworking, scrappy dudes. So it's fun. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. All right, so let's end it on this. Predict more or less prediction time. The when of
it
was it?
Do we have to predict, man? Do we have to predict that the series is unpredictable?
I'm with you. The question is, when does the series end? Obviously, Game 6 is in Washington. The Wizards will be the favorite team. Boston has not won there this year. So you could just say, well, going back home. But Boston, will be the favorite in Game 7. But on the flip side, I definitely know a lot of Wizards fans and pundits were thinking, boy, the Wizards, they look pretty good. They're going to get Game 5 and close it out in 6. So maybe minds have changed after what Boston just did in Game 5. So your call. If you don't want to make a pick, I won't blame you.
I'm going to make a pick. There's just a strong chance it's going to be wrong. I'm going to say I think I picked Boston in 7 before the series. I'm not even convinced I did it anymore. It seems like a really long time ago. All these 3 days in between game stuff is really, really ruining my brain. But I'm going to stick with Boston in 7. I think the home team gets every one.
Yeah, I'm saying it's going 7. And yeah, I'd like to sit here and say that, the Wizards are going to win Game 7. I'm saying that to the audience who's listening to me, who is hoping that the Wizards will win. It's just hard. It's hard to look at the evidence. I mean, you can point to Game 2 and say they were up 6 with 3 minutes to go, but they still didn't get it done, and then obviously get Game 5. So I'll say it goes 7, and, somewhat reluctantly, I guess I'll have to say at this point, Boston gets Game 7. I think I originally said Wizards in 6. I thought they'd win one of those first two games, which obviously didn't happen. And, it feels like the longer you go, it becomes a lot harder to win on the road, especially if you don't have Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, et cetera. And I'm not convinced either one of these teams have that guy. So I'll go 7. I'll go Boston. But it's going to be a doozy one way or the other.
Yeah, we'll see. This series, I wouldn't be surprised if Boston wins Game 6. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston gets blown the bleep out in Game 6. Like, there is little at this point that would surprise me. I've gone back and forth between thinking Boston was the best team, Washington was the best team, And now I'm just like throwing my hands up. I don't know anymore. I'll stick with my pre-series prediction and hope it's right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. All right, man, I'll go take a nap. I will see you tomorrow, game 6, 8 o'clock at Verizon Center. These teams will be back at it. Go follow Jay on Twitter at ByJKing. Go listen to the Locked on Celtics podcast for the Boston take on all things, although you don't necessarily listen to it today because it's going to be the same one as this, except for whatever Jay adds to it. But other than that, go listen to them. They've got a new podcast up for off of last night's game, a good one. You should check it out. All right, man. I will catch you later.
Thank you, my man. I will see you shortly.
All right. Many thanks to Jay for his take. Again, follow him on Twitter at ByJKing. While you're at it, if you don't already, hit the follow button for me at Ben Standigan for the podcast at Locked On Wizards. That way you won't miss any of the fun. I said I'd play something from Scott Brooks. I believe this is going to be a segment about him talking. Well, actually, it's probably going to be a couple of things, but I think this will at least talking about what he saw in that first quarter when Boston was able to get out, get 15 fast break points, just run up and down the court on the Wizards early, really throw them some big, big haymakers early, and the Wizards never really recovered. So here's Scott Brooks on what he saw in the first quarter and some other insight following the day after Game 5.
Uncontested layups and uncontested threes to start that game, and they really attacked us. They were aggressive. You know, they weren't happy with the way they played the games 3 and 4, and they came out and hit us, and hit us pretty hard, and we weren't ready for it.
With a chance to presumably look at some of the film from the game, what do you think led to them getting those 15 fast break points in the first quarter?
Well, we were on the floor a lot, whether we were going to an offense rebound and being pushed around or attacking the basket and not getting the call. Or standing in the corner and not getting back. Those are the areas that we have to get back. And you can't worry about nothing else other than getting back. The first three steps are critical in every transition defense, and we weren't sprinting back like with the urgency you have to in order to get a stop. They got a lot of good players on the floor, and they got a center that can make a lot of plays when he handles the ball. And if you don't buy yourself time with great effort and run backs, you put yourself in a bad position. 15 points in the first half in fast break points, that's not good. That's not good against us or against any team, and we put ourselves in that position. But give them credit, they made it happen by attacking us. And they weren't some of those outlet passes were open layups, and that's, we haven't been that way most of the year, and you know, we have to make sure we prevent us from playing that way to start the game tomorrow night.
All right, there you have it. Scott Brooks, Wizards coach, at practice, or at his availability, I should say, on Thursday. He said the coaches had a film session, but the players were essentially not there for anything informal. I did see, I think, Jan Mahimi walking by, and I'm sure there were some other guys there getting some work with the training staff, but that was about it. All right, let's end it there. Appreciate you guys, as always. Back tomorrow. We'll see if the Wizards are back. And actually, the home team has not lost in this series yet. If the Wizards keep that trend going, there'll be a Game 7 in Boston. If not, the season is over, and we go from talking about could this team possibly, you know, make the Eastern Conference Finals and compete with Cleveland to summer plans and the offseason and what could have been. And it really is amazing how these things can go so quickly. But we'll see if the Wizards can give us give us all some more basketball to watch in town. Guess I'll end it there. Ben Standig signing off. And until next time, see you.
Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Home drive. Off the shot. Dagger!